Our guest today sold his high-ticket dropshipping business, tried to launch a cold plunge brand in Italy, watched it fail, and then built his next company in 2 weeks using AI. All right, John Murphy's here. He's been on the Dropship Podcast before. He's a coach on our team. He's been in the community forever. But today we're not talking about dropshipping. We're talking about what happens after you sell and what happens when your next thing doesn't work. For people who don't know, quick version, John, e-bikes for hunters, high ticket dropshipping, you sold the business. What's the timeline there?
I launched in July 2017 and then I exited in December 2023. So I had about 6 years.
What does an exit like that look like?
In my case, so I sold for like mid six figures. If I'd have sold a year before, it would have been seven figures, but I thought the COVID boom was just going to continue to go, and it didn't. So I sold on the way down, but no regrets. I still wanted the exit, so it was like a nice full circle moment.
Yeah, I don't think you're unique in that fashion, right? Everything was booming. You're like, this is going to last forever. And in reality, that was euphoria. And you should have been like, you want to give me millions of dollars for my business? I will take that today, right? what were you thinking when you sold, right? You said you sold on the downturn, but you still said it was the right timing. Did you have a plan for what was next?
The only mistake I made in selling was I didn't have a what's next plan. That was just my, it was the big thing. So when I sold, I figured, okay, I don't need to work for a while. I can just do what makes me, you know, do what I like. Maybe the more creative aspects, I'll dabble here. And I ended up bouncing around from idea to idea for a lot, which was actually, it turned out to be an expensive hobby because I was starting things and not finishing them and not really getting anything done. So I really would have liked to have a better plan for afterwards because I could have just been a lot more focused and direct about it.
But look, at some point you stumbled on doing cold plunges. Specifically, you're from Italy, probably hear your accent, right? You decided to launch a cold plunge brand there. How many ideas were in the pipeline, or did you dabble in before you settled on, hey, I'm going to give this thing a real go?
I still have an affiliate marketing blog that I still own. I don't spend a lot of time on there. I was close to buying a few different stores on Flippa. One actually I really liked just because it felt like it was just bizarre. It was a sex toy business selling butt plugs. And I just thought that was just like the most bizarre thing. And that might be cool to own for a while. Like, what do you do? What do you do for work? You know, I sell butt plugs kind of thing. So I was actually really close to buying that. It was a good, like the numbers were good. I hate running ads. I'm just no good at it. And I figured that was going to be an SEO play anyway. So I was close to buying that. I almost bought a protein supplement business, which I'm glad I didn't, but I was just experimenting, trying to find what my thing might be. So I dabbled a little bit, but what I was doing at the time was, so back in 2023, maybe 2023, 2024, a friend of mine from Texas, he was running a cold plunge store. He still owns it. And we just hit it off. He hit me up randomly. I never met the guy. And he just asked me for help. But he asked me in the right way. And I just ended up becoming a friend of his. And I came like his like honorary mentor. Like, he never paid me for coaching, but we would have weekly calls. And I felt like it was almost my business, the way I was helping him so much. And I'd always really liked the longevity and biohacking niche. It was one of those things that I thought I might want to get into eventually. And then I met my friend, and he was in selling cold plunges and saunas. And I thought, well, I really like that niche. And the more I go into it, I really feel like it would be cool to have my own. But I didn't want to compete against him in the US market, which is where I'd always, you know, let's say set up shop. But because I live in Italy and I've lived in Italy for 23 years, I decided that I would do it here. There were lots of really good reasons to do that. But there were also the same reasons why it inevitably failed.
You said you were going to be the first one in Italy, right? So in your own words, it failed, right? What happened?
I made certain assumptions, and those assumptions were right, but they were also the downfall. So cold plunges still is not a thing in Italy. I don't know. They don't do it. The gyms don't even think it's important. Like, it hasn't reached Italy yet. And now I knew that coming in, and I thought, I'm going to be the first. And yes, it's going to be harder because the demand isn't there. But when it does, I'm going to be the only guy, or the first guy, or the one with the most traction. And that turned out to be a really expensive experiment because building awareness is a lot harder than, you know, supplying demand. And I found myself like just gifting products to MMA fighters in the Italian Cage Warriors community and sponsoring and influencer marketing and SEO work. And it was a real grind without a lot of traction. So that was one assumption. I was right. But once I was in the thick of it, I was like, oh, this is a real grind. And I just didn't really like, I was like, when is it going to, when do people start realizing that cold plunges is a thing? It still hasn't happened yet. But the other assumption, I knew everybody I spoke to, everybody in Italy, they all said, you're mad. Do not start a company in Italy. It's absolutely terrible. It's set up to make you fail. They trip you up at every hurdle. And I was like, I just had an exit. If I can do it in a different country, I've never even lived. I can do it in Italy. Yes, there might be some more red tape, but I know what I'm doing. And I was too cool for school. I didn't want to listen. I was like, but I can do it. And then it was just no matter what you do, you have to pay for. Like, I spent more money on like bureaucracy than anything else. I was paying taxes. I was paying business taxes and personal taxes before even making a sale, just because I own a company. And I was paying for my pension contributions from my personal account, even though I didn't have a salary, because I still wasn't profitable. If I wanted to make some sort of an amendment to something, like a legal document, I had to pay a notary like €2,000 just so he could print out some templated WordPress document he had on his desktop with my information. He stamps it, I pay him €2,000, and then I go to my accountant, who I legally have to have on retainer, and then pay them to then take the document and then give it to the department that needs to file it, whatever. So it was just, money was just, I could just see my e-bike generation money just dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping. And it wasn't fun because I felt like all I'm doing is I'm just paying other people money. I'm paying the government money. I'm paying the people that need to be in the chain. They're all getting rich and I'm just the one paying everybody's salaries. So it really sucked the energy out of, I want to make this work. And just as I was getting, I was like getting frustrated, a mentor of mine, Austin Nestle, that you know from 2X, he actually came to me and said, what are you working on? And I said, I've got this idea. I really think it could work if I can just be there when the awareness lands. I'm going to be the guy in the whole Italian market. And he says, I want to invest. And he went off and he was like, okay, I've got this fund. I'm ready to go. And I was like, great. And then it turns out there was like a whole 3-month process just to get one document from a notary in order for him to be able to wire the money so we don't get audited. And during that 3 months, because the bureaucracy took so long, the wheels started falling off. I just got more and more frustrated with things. So I ended up turning to Austin and said, look, Austin, I think this could still work. We'll end up probably losing 30 or 40% of that fund just in bureaucracy. I don't think you'll be happy in a year. So let's just stay friends. Let's not ruin the relationship. I'm just going to file for liquidation and walk away.
You said a million things in there. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to break down a few of those things in there. Look, so first off, bureaucracy sucks, right? We had a company who was headquartered in California. And so it's easy to take for granted what we have in America because, I've been here forever, right? And I'm sure a lot of Americans are listening to this who's like, man, I'm so glad it's easy to start a business here. My first taste of bureaucracy was California. There's fees upon fees and LLC fees and just unbelievable amounts of things that we had to handle over there. And thankfully, we had a main partner who was doing most of that, but it felt like every call they would come to, they were like, well, we got to pay this fee and we got to pay this fee. And so It sounds very similar in Italy. I can imagine how frustrating that is.
Yeah, so from what I understand by California, California is the closest thing to European red tape and, policies and stuff.
Yeah, and you mentioned one other thing too, which is something I don't think people think of when they're like launching their own product is the cash conversion cycle, right? Like, first off, you have to get some demand going, right? You talked about having to generate demand where in your old business, you're retailing other brands, other products where they have demand and you are capturing some of that demand, right? So you have to generate the demand, but you can't generate too much demand. because you only have so much product, right? And so when you get about halfway through your product that you probably given away and sold a couple, you have to find money to go order more.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's still no money in your pocket, but you made profit, right? And it sounds like in your country, you better pay some taxes on that profit right away instead of being able to, you know, write off the next purchase of inventory, right? And so like those the product businesses, you never seem to get to cash flow actually in your pocket, right? And so even if you create that demand, and you hopefully don't create too much, because if you create too much, then you're out of business because you can't even fulfill that demand, right? But if you create just enough, then you have just enough to go buy the next thing, and just enough to go buy the next one, and just enough to go buy the next one. And so it ends up taking years before you actually are able to put cash in your pocket. And I don't think that gets talked about enough. Certainly you're building brand equity, you're building something of value, but man, you're broke the entire process.
Yeah, and during this process, I remember, so I was spying on some other European competitors just to see what they were doing. Nobody was advertising in Italy, and nobody was translating their websites to Italian. So the Italian market was very, very untouched. And in fact, they didn't even know what a cold plunge was. But I was watching the Dutch and the British companies that were like, you know, miles ahead. And I was on their email list, and one of them emailed and said, you know, buy some product and own a small fraction of the business. Because we're raising funds to go into to break the US market. If you want to sign up, you'll get all of the paperwork, you'll see all of our earnings and all this. And I was like, oh, access, great. So I feigned interest in buying a portion of one of my big competitors' businesses, and they sent me all the paperwork, all the documentation, all their debts, all of the finances, their projections and everything. And the numbers were brutal. Like, they were robbing Peter to pay Paul, and then robbing somebody else to pay. It's like it was just like a, you know, they're always just moving money around to clear a debt, to pay for something else, to invest in somewhere else, to then cover another debt. And profit margins were like 2%. And I was like, am I doing all that to eventually get to this? So, you know, there were lots of things that was just like it, because it wasn't fun along the way. I decided I could continue funding this, and I could get an investor involved, and we could pull it off. But so last month in March, I just said, look, you know, I'm just going to file for liquidation, lick my wounds, empty the warehouse, and just move on.
Well, I'm sad my free cold plunge didn't show up at my door, but I'm sure it's on the way. Thank you very much for that, for liquidating that.
Hey, it's John here. I just wanted to let you know that the Low Bar Pod membership is now live. So if you've been loving the show and you'd love to hang out directly with myself and Ben and a whole bunch of other like-minded individuals to do more fun business stuff, head to lowbarpod.com/join. It's just $9 a month. It's cancel at any time. We can't wait to see you inside.
So how do you go from, all right, I'm done with cold plunges, my bank's dwindling, to fraud detection, right? Like, I know you've been a champion for a long time in our community of hey, well, first off, we would recommend ClearSale, right? So if an order comes in, you know, Shopify tells you sometimes, hey, this is fraud, this is not fraud. You can use that to your own judgment, right? We would recommend people sign up for ClearSale, who would then do the detection for you on fraud, right? They would tell you yes or no. If they say yes, and indeed that order was fraud, they would reimburse you, right? They take, who knows, 1% of sales, maybe a little bit less. But as your store gets bigger, 1% becomes real money. And so you, I believe you were the first one that ever brought this up. You were like, hey, they're just using this software called Ekata. You can just buy this yourself. So I want to say you're the if you're not the first person who brought it up, you're the first person I've heard it from. And so you've been championing, hey, use this Ekata for quite a long time, right? So how does, all right, I'm done with cold plunges, my bank account's dwindling, you know, you're in our community ranting about Ekata and fraud protection all the time. Where did the light bulb happen of like, hey, I should probably do something here?
So there were two events that were happening in parallel, and it just came together. So one of the two was, I decided I was going to quit the Italian market, and I was going to go back to the US market and start a new store. And I picked a niche. I picked hobbyist metal detecting equipment. And I even have a store. It's like, it's live, but it never got completed. It's usametaldetectors.com. I was going to just get back into the high ticket drop shipping, and that was going to be my next 3 to 5 years.
Terrible name, by the way. Terrible name. Yeah. No one who starts a retail business should name it USA's niche keyword.
I was really, really going for just, I don't know, the whole patriotic aspect of it, and maybe sure, just like me for that. Even the logo is like a guy walking in front of a USA flag. Very, very, you know, American, but from a European point of view anyway. But so I was building that store, and I was planning for like that store's next steps. And I said, you know what, I've used Ekata in the past. The new owner of the other of my old store continued to using it afterwards. It works, and it's a flat fee, so it's kind of it's predictable pricing. Why don't I start the onboarding process of Ekata now for the new store, and I'll just get that set up while I'm waiting for suppliers to come back to me and stuff.
But maybe we should describe exactly what Ekata does, right? So, describe in your words what it's actually doing. Right, this is actually a software of is it MasterCard?
Well, MasterCard now bought Ekata, so it's part of the MasterCard group. Yes. When I found Ekata, I was looking for a more affordable way to do fraud protection in-house, because I was paying ClearSale anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 a month, because I was paying them nearly 1%, and it was ridiculous. And I wasn't getting a lot of fraud, so it didn't make sense for me. So I went out and found that Ekata was another kind of it was the licensed software that a lot of other businesses like Signify and ClearSale would build upon on top of and then offer it as a service. But you could license the software and use it for your own business. So instead of being protected, like insured in case it is a fraud, you do roll the dice yourself, but you get a lot more information so you can make a more informed decision. So you would use Ekata to enter all the customer information, and you would get results and some parameters based on whether it's like high risk, low risk, or medium risk. And then you make the determination yourself. But it was predictable, it was affordable, and yes, you're not insured by anything, but I was comfortable with that because I wasn't in a high risk category, not really.
But what's it doing essentially, right? The customer data comes in, you're putting in, hey, this is their name, this is the address that they're saying bill to, this is potentially a different address that they're saying ship to, here's the IP address coming. What other information is that platform taking in to help you determine, hey, yes, this is a real person or this is someone impersonating someone?
So they have often it can identify who the phone number is registered to. If it's a landline, if it's an internet number, it will tell you if the email had been created that same day, or if it's been if it's an old like AOL account from like 98 or something. So there are all certain things. It doesn't tell you whether that's good or bad. It tells you the information, and then you can go and make a determination. So you learn what red flags are and what are not. So you can then go and make a determination of, yeah, I feel comfortable taking this sale. So when I started using Ekata years ago, I just learned how the tool worked, learned all the red flags, and then trained my team, because eventually it was going to be my team that were going to be looking at all those orders and not me. So we had a good in-house process using Ekata. So we would just in-house vet all of our orders.
Yeah, and I don't think you're alone in that, right? We have a bunch of our own students in our community who use this to vet their orders, as they don't want to pay that fee. I think there's a lot of big businesses who are doing this, right? Their team is doing this. Somebody has to go through here and at least make some sort of determination on whether there's fraud or not. And certainly in our community, we sell high-ticket items, and you're going to care more about capturing fraud when you're selling a $4,000 item than when you are selling a $40 or a $20, you know, CPG type item. So I think this is more prevalent using it yourself in a community where higher ticket is essential. But I do think there's a lot of lower, you know, CPG brands that are using stuff like this too, or using a company like ClearSale, or using a company like, I don't know if Signify is still around or not. There's lots of companies like this that will, you know, do this as a service.
Yeah, and like the Signified, ClearSale, they've got large market share. But where I wanted to have Ekata because I had thin margins with e-bikes, so my overhead was expensive, and my highest expense was ClearSale, so that's why I went that route. And that's why I wanted to put it on USAML detectors, because I figured, let's just start properly, I'll get everything in place. And ever since they've moved to MasterCard, since MasterCard has taken over, it was painful. After 6 weeks, I just basically just replied to the VP of sales. I just told him to go stuff it. I was like, look, I don't want it anymore. I couldn't get on a call with them. I even had different people from our community make a referral. And twice I signed up on the website to be contacted so I could get the demo. And I even said, look, I've been an advocate, an ambassador for the brand. I was actually a beta tester, testing your API on Shopify stores, as a guinea pig. So I'm that much of an early, you know, a user. I don't even need the demo. I just want to get signed up. I have a new business list. I just want to get started. If you want to call, great. Couldn't get on a call with them. I kept emailing them. I've got emails where I can say that I replied 4 or 5 minutes afterwards saying, yes, I'm available. Please send a link, you know? Or like as Khabib would say, send location. I was basically just, you know, just yes, send a link, whatever time works for you. I even said, I'll be awake until midnight. Send the link and I'll join. I couldn't get on the phone. And while I was getting frustrated with Kata, thinking, how could it be this difficult to sign somebody up that wants to give you their money? I was in the, you know, I was in Slack talking, chatting away with your community. And one of the students actually just messaged. It was on March 2nd, I remember, because I was recently looking to see how long it took me to go from A to B. And on March 2nd, she messaged saying, oh my God, I just got a chargeback for $4,000. What do I do? So just being helpful, I replied and said, do you have ClearSale? And she said, no. I said, what did Shopify say? She said, Shopify, she said it was like a medium. I was like, okay, well then, do you know if it was fraud or is it the customer that was difficult and they filed a chargeback because they're not happy? And she says, I don't know. So it was like really vague. So she didn't have the information. She didn't even know if it was real fraud or just like friendly fraud. So I said, okay, give me all the if you're okay with DMing me the customer information, I'll reach out to my VA, my old VA, because I'm still in their old Slack group. And I'll just ask him to run it through the system and just give me the IKATA report. And he ran it through and it was like red flags everywhere, brand new email, burner phone number, shipping address registered to somebody else in a different state. It was just red flags everywhere. So I sent her the report and she said, oh my God, I wish I'd had this before, as I clearly wouldn't have taken the order. And I thought, how many other people could I do that for? And I thought, I can't even give IKATA my money. ClearSale is too expensive for a lot of these stores. And this took me like 10 minutes. I could do that. I could do that at scale. So I thought, I wonder how would I do that? And I actually reached out to IKATA separately. And I said, what are your terms of service? Can I build on top of your software? I want to build an agency. And they were like, that's against our terms of service. So I ended up going one layer deeper and I found the raw software that doesn't even have a front-facing dashboard or anything. It's basically you build a tool, you connect the API to this software, and you then get what IKATA has. So I ended up building a tool similar to IKATA, but with more information, with more IP-centric information. And now I offer it as a service.
Hey, John here for just a sec. You know how we're always breaking down these wild business ideas and road testing opportunities that other podcasts won't touch? Well, we're growing our own business here. This podcast, and we need your help. So here's the deal. If the Low Bar podcast has given you that holy shit I can actually do this moment, or just made your commute less boring, help us out. If you're watching on YouTube, go and hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on Spotify, go to our profile page on Spotify and smash that 5-star button. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the review button and leave us a review. It takes you just 30 seconds, costs you nothing, but helps us reach more people who think starting a business is rocket science, which it's not. And it will also give us the momentum we need to do even more fun and crazy business stuff right here for your entertainment. We love to keep it real with you. Now keep it real with us. Let's grow this thing together.
So you built this out of wanting to like see if you could, or like, did you already know I'm going to offer this as a service? Or was it simply like, hey, this AI shit is kind of fun. I think I could build this. Let's go see if I can build it.
The same day, I sent that report on March 2nd and I said, look, I'm really sorry, Brad News. It's definitely fraud. Here are all the red flags. Sent her the report. And then she replied saying, oh my God, I wish I had this report before, because, you know, and I thought there's a business to that. There's a business there. And then that was when the penny dropped and I thought, you know, I'm going to pull on that thread for a few days and see if I'm still as excited in like 3 days. And I just went down the rabbit hole. How do I make this work? What do I need to do? Asking ChatGPT, what tool could I do and how do I get orders from Shopify? And I just pulled on that thread and then I came out the other end with a working tool.
Well, look, this show is business is simple. People are just lazy. And I truly believe that if you can spend some time with AI the way that you did, you can come up with some pretty cool stuff and build something, right? It may not come up with the ideas for you, and it probably won't. And if they do, they're not going to be very good. But if you can come with a problem you want to solve, it can really help you solve it. So I'm going to ask you some like really technical questions here just real quick. Like when you say you built with AI, what specifically? The website, the systems, the SOPs, the marketing? Did you build it all with AI? And if so, what tools did you use?
So the workflow and tech stack looks like this. Shopify webhook is pulled into Make. So Make is like Notion or Zapier, one of those. And then Make then transfer all this data and maps it into Airtable. And Airtable is where we then see visually all of the orders that come in. And then we have our internal tool that I built, where we actually run the API through the software. And then we manually then input our findings back into Airtable, and then Airtable generates the report using Google template. So the actual tech stack isn't AI. I just wouldn't have known how to build it or how to put it together or how to create the mapping sequences without AI. AI basically held my hand through the whole process from start to finish. Using tech that isn't necessarily AI, but I wouldn't have known how. I'm not a tech guy. Like, I'm not using Make to run scripts or to connect APIs or pull data from other software. So like ChatGPT basically walked me through, taught me how to use Make, taught me how to connect Make to Airtable, taught me how to connect Make to Shopify via webhook, and how to get all that information into a readable format by just mapping this to this to this. And when it didn't work, I would just take a screenshot and say, this is the error I'm getting. What's going on? And it'd say, oh, yep, there we go. I remember, so when I started pulling on that thread with ChatGPT, I ended up having 1 week, and I got it done in 1 week because I remember thinking, how all the crap it works. And I did this in like 5 days. I started on ChatGPT one day with the idea of, here's what I want to accomplish. What do I need to do? How is it possible? And I ended up spending like 10 hours on inside of ChatGPT, just going back and forth, signing up for software, figuring out how it works, testing it, you know, doing sample runs and stuff. And what happened was, at the end of day one, ChatGPT was just dead slow. I couldn't get a response back. It was just thinking, because it just run out of steam on me. So what I found was, I would have these 10 or 12 hour days for 5 days straight. And at the end of day one, I would say, okay, I can't keep going like this because it's too slow. So summarize everything we did today and our next step in a nice little snippet, so I can give it back to you in a new chat tomorrow morning. And then we start from where we left off. And at the end of every day, we basically had like chapter two and then chapter three and chapter four. And by the end of day five, I hooked up a couple of my friends' stores, and I said, just please let me connect to your store for 5 days, and I'll run a few tests for a week, and I just started seeing all their orders coming in. I knew it was working.
So it sounds very similar to, I've been building a new business, right? A new e-commerce business. And Shopify has changed a lot over the last few years, right? A whole lot, in fact. Right before Shopify 2.0 or whatever they called it came out, we had a custom system built that allowed us to like not have to learn 2.0. And so now that this new store, everything has changed, meta fields, dynamic sources, all sorts of stuff that I'm just unfamiliar with, right? And I think that a lot of people would look at that and go, I can't figure this out. Right? Or I don't know how to learn that. Or in your case, right? I don't know how to use a webhook or any of those things. And I'm literally doing the same thing as you. I'm taking a screenshot of the page. I use Claude. I pull it into Claude and I'm like, hey, what the fuck? What do I need to do here? Right? And it'll explain it. If it's too complex, then be like, hey, I'm a little slower than that explanation. Slow it down for me. Right? And it'll slow it down for you and kind of walk you through stuff. And it gets stuff wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's like, you know, it's telling me where to put stuff in my theme that it doesn't exactly know where that code is. Perhaps it's using like outdated information. I know when I give it some Merchant Center stuff, it's telling me to click buttons that don't exist anymore. I know that's the old Merchant Center and things like that. And so it's not perfect. Right? But like, you have a partner next to you that can help you solve a lot of the technical things that I think hold a lot of people back. And so I find it very interesting that you honestly did a very similar process in building this business. Look, I have another question for you. So I had an idea on a walk not quite ready to tell the whole world about this idea yet, but probably soon here. We'll say it on the podcast. Had an epiphany on a walk, brainstormed the whole, like shut off the podcast I was listening to, open up ChatGPT, brainstormed the whole business. It told me to go use Lovable, and I built a whole business in Lovable in about 2 days. But I was missing one key thing, and I'm curious if you ran into the same thing. It's very easy to build the front end. It's very easy to build all the systems that you need. Like, right, there's a whole back end that I hadn't even considered. And so when I asked Lovable, hey, am I missing anything? It said, yeah, hey, don't forget about like security infrastructure and the fact that you don't want people's data mixing. And you know, there's a whole lot of pieces there. So I'm curious if you ran into that same, you know, the obstacle as you came along. You're like, it's very easy to focus on the front end, but did the back end kind of, you know, come, you know, whip its tail around and smack you in the back of the head?
Not yet. And it would have in my next step. But because I want to move fast, yesterday I hired a developer to build the Freak tool 2.0, which will have all of the client-facing aspects. So login credentials, no bleeding of one client's orders with another client's orders, and no one client can see somebody else's. And because that's next. So basically what happens is now is that we do all of the review manually. So me and my analyst, and another analyst is starting on May 4th, and we see everything. We look at everything, and then we manually give our findings in an investigation. The investigation results are here already, and then that is then generated into a standard format PDF, and then we send the PDF to the client. That's version one. Version two, which is I am starting as of yesterday, is I'm going to reduce the workflow for us internally. And instead of then having to generate the PDF and then send the PDF to the client, all of the information we input into Airtable is then going to be presented as a results page on a client-facing dashboard. So they'll get a notification to say, your review has been performed, here are your results. They go onto the dashboard and then they can see it. But that's when the complexity begins. So they'll all have their own credentials to log in. They can only see their store's orders and not every other client's store's orders. And they'll be able to see previous orders so they can filter and stuff. So once it got to that stage, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to get a developer to build something for me. And I'm actually going to take off for 2 weeks. I'm going to be in Japan for two weeks, and it takes 4 weeks to build. So I'm like, okay, start now. I'll see you in 4 weeks. and then I'm going to roll out version two. But I know exactly what you're talking about because I had those conversations with ChatGPT.
Yeah, that was the exact step where I was like, yep, for sure. The person who's ordering this doesn't want to see, you know, what John's ordering and doesn't want to see what Sally's ordering. So yeah, I'm not shocked by that. So what surprised you about this process with AI? Because honestly, I think more people just need to use it. I think there's a lot of people who are you know, they're dabbling. Maybe they get it a little bit, but you could do a lot of stuff with this, and I would say I'm a power user at this point. I'm using it constantly. I'm trying to get even the plebs, if you will. I'm trying to get my dad, hey, just go talk to it every once in a while. Like, you know, you're sitting home, you're retired, you're alone. Like, just go talk to it every once in a while. I bet you find a new friend if you want, you know, also like go down some rabbit holes. What surprised you about this process now that you've went a little bit deeper than the average person?
Once I go beyond what I normally use ChatGPT for, and like I go further and further each time I really have to go and figure something out. And then when I come at the other end, it feels like I've just developed a superpower. It's like, holy, it's kind of like magic. You know, it's very, very exhilarating. When I, as somebody that's never built anything before, I didn't know what Make was until ChatGPT told me it would work actually really well. I come out, and the thing is now, because I've used AI and I built something I wouldn't have been able to build without it, not only do I feel like this is great, I wouldn't have been able to do it without AI, but the way the process that it led me down, it didn't just, there's your tool, go and sell it to the world. It taught me how to build a tool. So if something breaks, not only do I have AI there to accompany me to try and fix it, I know how it was built because I built it myself. AI didn't just run some code and then spit out some fancy project at the end. I know how to fix it if something goes wrong. I know how to troubleshoot. So I've leveled up my skills to a degree that I never thought was possible.
I think too many people use it to have it tell you what to do, right? Rather than like teach me. right? Just you go do it. Think for me rather than teach me how to think, which I think is the real power of having a true supercomputer in your pocket. At this point, there's no excuse for anyone to not like do anything. Like you have a supercomputer in your pocket and it's not going to be perfect, right? We have people who get on sales calls for our course and they'll be like, wow, can't AI just teach me this? And I'll be like, yeah, I'll sit here while you go try to talk to it. It doesn't quite get a lot of stuff right, if I'm honest with you, right? But like when it comes to the technical side of things of like, here's my idea, here's how I'm thinking I want this to work. Can you work me through the technical pieces of it? Absolutely. It can help you put things together that you just said you would have never been able to solve on your own, or it might have taken months and months and months, or hiring a developer to solve.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got to the end of it. Like I would have just got frustrated and said, "Oh, screw this." You know, I wouldn't have come out the other end. And it was great.
You launched this. What's the response been? Like, how are people reacting to it? What feedback are you getting from early users?
They absolutely love it. So I only have a few clients in there now because I literally just launched 3 weeks ago. It hasn't even been a month. So it's very early, but the early users are very excited. My first client, Bill, day one, caught a fraud straight away. Like day one, and there was a very blatant high risk order that came through, and he was very pleased to tell me about that. So that was good. Like in 3 weeks, we've gone through. We're at about $650,000. For over 400 investigations performed in 3 weeks, and it's ramping up because more people are interested. I'm talking to other people as well. What I found is that the few early adopters is that like actual. So my first client, his name's Bill. He's actually an IKEA user, so he understands the concepts and stuff. But I'm saving him so much time and saving his team so much time that I've basically taken work off their plate. So like a simple example, he has a very competent assistant who goes through Ikata, performs the review, and then makes a determination. That takes them maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then they process an order. They have like 10, 15 orders a day, sometimes even 25, 30 in the summer. So that's a lot of time. But when it's not very conclusive, this is a low-risk order, the assistant, like the VA, isn't making a judgment call. They're going back to Bill and saying, hey, Bill, we've got this scenario. Here's the scenario. I'll send you the link or whatever. And then Bill's taking time out of his day to then make judgment calls regularly because there are a lot of these, let's say, medium-risk orders. So because what we do is we don't just give somebody a low, medium, or risk, low, medium, or high. We tell them what the signals are, what we think, and then we join the dots because there are certain red flags that are just plausible in everyday, you know, life. So we say, here's this, but considering all of these other factors, here's what's really going on. So this is what we recommend. And then so the person that receives the report can then just go and either place the order or decline. So I'm saving time for the person who's actually supposed to be looking at it, and also the business owner who doesn't have to be pulled back into the day-to-day to make these judgment calls. So for that reason, that one particular customer is fantastic. He is just very happy.
Yeah, shout out Bill. Bill might be one of my favorite people I've ever met through this entire e-commerce journey. I've worked with him one-on-one. I've worked with him as a student. I've flown out to Arizona and hung out with him. Like I love Bill to death. So shout out him starting this. And like you said, you're saving him time, right? But you're not just saving him time, you're saving him cost, right? So walk us through the pricing. You and I kind of went back and forth on this. I told you, you should charge more, right? And so
yeah,
you know, where did you start with pricing and where did you settle and where do you think you're going to be?
That's a good question because I had a four-hour conversation with ChatGPT about this yesterday. So there we go, we're using AI again. So I started on thinking I need to charge less than Ikata because it's kind of similar. Like it's the most similar offer that there is, except with Ikata, you have to train one of your staff members to use Ikata, identify the red flags, and then make a come to a conclusion. Whereas we have a similar tool as Ikata, but we're the trained eyes and investigators doing the review and then just giving you the outcome. So we are saving you in some ways, but I still felt like I needed to charge less. So I had started thinking, well, $199 a month is less than Ikata and that's cheap. But I mean, like all talking to you, I immediately realized that that's not going to fly at all, but I still didn't want to charge like too much. So I ended up landing on $249 and launched, which I think is good. But I spent 4 hours on ChatGPT going back, looking at How many minutes does it take to perform a review? How many hours are there in a day? How many average orders are my current clients having? And I was like, ooh, there's a clear capacity roof, very close. So actually, here's the conclusion I'm coming to. And maybe you can offer me some advice here. So my average client right now has about 10 orders a day. The capacity by charging $249 a month, I know that my break even, including tech stack and analysts and just random fees, my break even is 5 clients. But if they all have an average of 10 orders a day, my capacity is also 5 clients. So at my current pricing, I hit capacity of what we can do at my break even, which means the economics are wrong. So I am actually going to increase pricing on May 1st, and I haven't settled on the number yet, but it needs to be higher because I need to be able to have, obviously the business needs to be profitable, and I need to, like, sometimes we just need 45 minutes to go down the rabbit hole and look up other things outside of our tool when we just don't have a conclusive decision for a store. Sometimes we just need to spend more time. Like today I went on somebody's Facebook profile to get a definitive, yep, it's her. And sometimes we just need the time to do that. So I can't be saying it's 5 minutes, make a decision. Otherwise, it's not going to be a great product. So I came to two conclusions. I need stores in that 3 to 5 orders a day range, ideally high ticket, because then that would make sense for them. And I need to charge a bit more per each client. That way, around five clients would still be my break even, but we're not at capacity because of the volume of orders we're doing. So then every client after 5 is where we start going into profitability.
I think the way I would think about this is trying to think through what are they spending currently, right? You said it's about 15 minutes per order. They have 10 orders per day. They're likely paying someone, we'll call it $8 an hour in the Philippines, just for a round number there, right? So you just said they're going to spend 2.5 hours a day at $8 an hour. That's $20 a day, 30 days in a month. That is $600 a month, right, that they're going to be spending on this, plus the tool, right? So now they're at $1,000 a month,
yeah.
Plus the time that they're taking away from the founder, which is invaluable, right? And so I think, one, you have to scale with orders. You're going to have to let the market be the market, obviously. They're going to tell you whether you're insane or not on this pricing, but you have to scale with the order process. That almost makes you want to lean all the way back into ClearSale and just be like, you know what, I'll just take a small percentage of all your orders, and like that scales appropriately. But I do think people like a flat fee. And so, you know, how do you start people? How do you get them in the door at a price where they're comfortable with it, and you scale with them and just say, you know, for this many, like that's the math. Right, this many orders I can do for this price, this many orders I can do for this price, and so on and so forth. And I think once you realize the value that it is to them, like you're saving them, it's a wash at $1,000 right where you are, right? And so if you're charging $250 for what they're paying $1,000 for, they're going to take it all day long, right? But you're forgetting the founder's time in there. And so if you charge $1,000 and it's the same, they're going to be like, well, I get all my employees' time back, I get all my time back, and I'm breaking even on the cost. That's a really good deal, right? And so I think that's probably the math that I would work through in my head. But again, the market is the market, as Gary Vee would say, right? They're either going to tell you you're insane, or they're going to tell you you're a genius.
Yeah, yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about it that way, because I was thinking more about how many orders average, and what's our capacity. I didn't think about it that way. But that would mean that there's plenty of room for me to work with. I definitely do need to figure out some sort of a tier where it's like, okay, I can work with you, but because you've got 1,000 orders a month, you fit into this bucket here, because that would require a dedicated analyst just for your store, and that's going to cost me a certain amount, so that's why it's costing you a certain amount. And I do need to go back to the drawing board to figure that out, because it was a little bit of naivety also for me, because I never got 10 orders a day on my store. I did really well with my store, but it was like in the absolutely like peak seasonality of it, I would get like 5 orders a day, and I was like dancing in my living room in front of the computer looking at 5 orders. So then now that I'm helping guys that are just doing numbers that I never did, it's like, yeah, maybe I should reconsider some of these things.
I'm sure there's people listening who are thinking of like CPG, right? And they're like, 5 orders, like you did 5 orders a day on your best day, right? And that's the beauty of what we do on the high ticket stuff, right? When you're selling $4,000 e-bikes every day, that's $20,000 a day in revenue. And yeah, certainly there's people, you know, Bill's one of them, but there's a lot of people in our community who are, you know, approaching 8 figures, and some of them into 8 figures, that are doing, you know, massive numbers.
Yeah, and the thing is, another person from the community that is on that level, who actually came to me and says, "Oh, I'm ready to sign up. Let me sign up on May 1st. I'm going to let my IKATA membership expire, and then I'm on board." And I said, "Okay, book some time in my calendar before then, because I really need to figure something out first, because I know how many orders you get a day, and that scares me, especially with my current pricing. So I don't want to make anything. I don't want to make promises that I can't fulfill, because at the end of the day, it's still a human in the loop service. We're like real analysts. Like, I'm looking at 50% of the orders, and Ramon is my other analyst. We're looking at 50% of the orders, and it's not going to an AI coming back with a result, and then we're just translating. We're literally like typing information and giving context. So it's scalable to a certain point. And because the human factor isn't scalable necessarily, the number of clients, or let's say the capacity needs to be managed, and the pricing. So I'm in that weird transition now. Is like, okay, I figured I've got this fantastic offer. I've got this fantastic, let's say, business, but I haven't figured out, like, all the kinks haven't been worked out yet. But these first 3 weeks have been fantastic. The business, the system is working fantastic. The tool is great. And version 2 is coming out in a month, which is going to make my process time run maybe 40% shorter on the average order, which means capacity can go bigger with less analysts. So I think in 2 months, it's going to be even better. But I still have a few of these core fundamental business concepts to really nail home.
All right, I got one more question for you. In hindsight, looking back, it's been a few years now, right? And it kind of feels like you're finding your footing on this one.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do some things differently after your exit, right? So what would you tell someone who's in that, sold my business, looking for the next big thing phase, or they're thinking about selling and maybe they haven't really thought this through? Like, what advice would you go back and give 2023, John?
Have a plan for what comes next. For me, it was I spent time and money just bouncing around and experimenting with your ideas. But because there was money in the bank, I felt like I can afford to do this. The idea will come. But like, the ideas are everywhere. Like you and I know, and people that are doing what we do. Like once you open the floodgates to like, you start seeing ideas, you can't turn that off. But just, I would have liked to pay attention to those things a little better and just be a little bit more deliberate about what opportunities are there and what I could do. And yes, take some time off, but take time off to go and pull on those threads. I don't like, I didn't have a plan. That's the big problem. I didn't have a plan. And I ended up just bouncing around. I did some coaching. I tried to affiliate marketing. And I did all these things that at the end of the day, it was just fluff and there wasn't really anything serious. And I really, really wish I had a plan for what came next.
But even that sounds sexy, right? Like like imagining if I could just shut everything I'm doing off tomorrow. There are at least 5 to 10 different podcasts we've done on this show alone where it's like, yep, I'd go try the postcard thing. I would go try the local bar thing. I would go try the shorts thing. I would go call Shannon up and say, hey, I'm going to get some pallets off of B-Stock. I'm going to do some of this reselling stuff. I would definitely hop on Whatnot at this point and like do some live selling I would try all the things, right? I would dabble in everything, I think.
Well, that's the thing. So I did that, and I thought this was the best use of my time because it's only that way that I'll find my next thing. But the more I did that and the more I realized I haven't found the big thing, I felt more anxious to get started. The longer I left it, the more anxious I felt, like I still haven't found it yet. And then I felt like I was rushing into a new business because I still hadn't found it. So I think, you should give yourself, 3 months off or 6 months off, depending on how well your exit was. But definitely have a plan to get back into it. And if you already know what your next idea is, then fantastic. I didn't, but I was so unprepared for what next, that it was a lot of noise and no focus.
All right, I think you called it Freak. I've been calling it Frick. Where do people find you online?
So I call it Freak just because of the Italian pronunciation of F-R-I-Q. It's freaklabs.com. And Freak is short for Fraud Risk IQ because basically we sell intelligence. It's fraud risk intelligence. And it's F-R-I-Q labs.com. And if anybody wants to reach out, there's Below the sign-up button, there's also an opportunity to just reach out and ask me questions over Zoom for 15 minutes. So people can reach me that way.
Nice. Well, I'm sure our audience here on Low Bar will find this interesting, but also, you know, all of our community, we're going to push this out to our community too. This is built just for you guys. So reach out to John. And if you want to hear his full story, you can find that on our other podcast, on the Dropship Podcast. But I wanted to tell this little this story over here, John. So thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, real quick, while I have you here at the very end of the show, John and I are trying to grow our social media channels. We're also sharing what we're doing from some of these podcasts on the social media. So we'd love to have you follow us. You can find us at Low Bar Podcast on TikTok and on X, and you can find us at Low Bar Pod on Instagram and on Facebook. Of course, all of these will be in the show notes of every episode. So if you could give us a follow, maybe like a few posts. Obviously, we're trying to grow our business too. Thank you so much for listening and following along and helping us grow what John and I are trying to build here.